Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I truly appreciate it. Welcome to the show if you've never been here before. I think you're going to like it, and this is a great, great conversation to start on. If you have been here before, thanks for coming back. You know I appreciate you being here, and I also think that you're going to dig this. Throughout this conversation, we're going to discuss the entrepreneurial mindset, thinking like an entrepreneur. And as you may or may not know, this to me is a core foundation of becoming an entrepreneur, of creating businesses and building things that you want to see in the world and making a living doing it. In fact, created a whole course based around this. So if this intrigues you and you want to learn more, head over to hacktheentrepreneur.com. Up there in the top at the navigation, you'll see courses and you can track it down there. But rather than talk about that, let's now get into the show. My guest on the show today started his career as a lawyer, where he spent 4 years before becoming an entrepreneur. This transition, though, happened over 40 years ago. He's what I would call a serial entrepreneur, having started 11 companies of varying degrees of successes. This conversation, it takes a couple fascinating turns as we discuss $100 million plus exits from businesses and business ideas that have continued to pay him every single year for over a decade. In addition to his own ventures, he's been investing in companies for the past 18 years. And through all of this, he began to notice this thread of successful entrepreneurs, which is that entrepreneurial mindset. So he put pen to paper and wrote a new book called The Dream Toolbox. Now, let's hack Kenneth Aldrich. Now, just before we get into today's conversation, I want to introduce you to Masterclass. Masterclass is online classes taught by the world's greatest minds. From business to cooking to space exploration and songwriting, Masterclass covers an excellent number of topics and subjects. In fact, this past weekend, I went through Anna Wintour. She's a longtime editor-in-chief of Vogue, now the artistic director for Condé Nast. She's this powerful and had this hugely successful career over the past 40 plus years with tons of knowledge on leadership. And it fits in with the entrepreneurial mindset because it's how she handles like criticism and approaches her work. Learning directly from someone with such a vast amount of experience was to me an amazing way to spend a Sunday afternoon. But again, Masterclass isn't just business all of the time. I also caught a glimpse of Gordon Ramsay as he teaches cooking in his, well, unique style. Masterclass is an app. It's accessible on your phone, on the web, or on your Apple TV, and it offers classes on a huge, massive variety of topics. But here's the thing, they're all taught by world-class masters at the top of their fields. I highly recommend you check it out. Get unlimited access to every Masterclass, and as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you can get 15% off the annual all-access pass. Go to masterclass.com/hack. That's masterclass.com/hack. Sign up today and get unlimited access to every Masterclass available. Learning directly from someone with such a vast amount of experience was, to me, an amazing way to spend a Sunday afternoon. And we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, absolutely my pleasure, Ken. Absolutely my pleasure. We're going to have a lot of fun in this conversation. So let's just dive straight into it.
Okay, I'm ready.
Ken, you've got some experience behind you, so I'm excited to hear the answer to this question. As an entrepreneur, Ken, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I think probably the biggest single thing is that I have always assumed that no matter what obstacles were ahead of me, there was a solution to them. And it goes back to something that I spent quite a lot of time writing about in Dream Toolbox, which is that most of us tend to look at problems and barriers as just that, a barrier that is a wall we can't get over, or under, or around. And I found that it's an enormously helpful mindset for me to instead look at every barrier as a puzzle that can be solved, because the very definition of a puzzle is that it has a solution. And once I made that mind shift, and I don't know when I did it originally, it was some time back, and I was facing something that looked a lot like a freight train coming down a tunnel with me in the middle. But at any rate, somehow I stumbled onto that way of looking at things. And it has made an enormous difference in both my happiness, quite frankly, and also in my ability to solve problems in a way that preserved companies. So if I had to pick one thing, that would probably be it.
So it's the ability It is kind of the same thing as the ability to solve problems, because if you go into it with the idea that this problem possibly can't be solved, you've already kind of set yourself up for failure.
Exactly. And it's an interesting mindset. I mean, what I've been writing about anyway is not tools and tricks for the entrepreneur. There are thousands of books out there about that, but more how to change our basic core beliefs and mindset to an entrepreneurial mindset, which I think has worked remarkably well for me. So yeah, I think if you just begin, and certainly it's worked for me, by thinking about whatever is the big obstacle, and there always are tons of them. I was thinking last night about one of the more successful companies I started, which before we were done, we had faced economic near death several times and had changed the business model at least three times because of technological issues and other things. And each one of them looked like an absolute wall that was way bigger than I could climb. But I had a partner at the time, and as we began to sort of brainstorm what to do about it and think about it, okay, this is just a puzzle. If we figure out the right tools, if we figure out the way to attack this Rubik's Cube of a problem we have, there's got to be a solution in there somewhere. And sure enough, there was, and we ended up selling the company for several hundred million dollars, not too many years after I was trying to figure out how to make the next payroll. So it's been enormously valuable to me, and I recommend it to anyone has not tried it. It's worth it.
So this idea of the entrepreneurial mindset, does it go in your mind, Ken, does it go beyond just thinking of every problem that there is a solution to it?
Yeah, it goes way beyond that. And that's why I ended up writing a whole book instead of just a short blog, which is how I started on this mission of mine. Yeah, because it's the entrepreneurial mindset is really a different way of looking at the whole financial universe, if you will. And I think it's one that every successful entrepreneur has. It's just not everybody articulates it the same way. For example, I've never met an entrepreneur, myself included, who succeeded without having a pretty clear vision of where they wanted to go. And I don't mean I want to make a gazillion dollars as much as what do I want to do that changes the world? What product do I want to create? What is my vision for the future? And I've found that in the cases where I've gone off on a toot, so to speak, without that being really clear, nothing good happened. But where I really had a dream that I wanted to fulfill, in the case of the company I just mentioned, we were trying to change the way vision surgery was done. We thought we had the next step beyond LASIK surgery, and it turned out what we ended up with was instead a way for surgeons doing cataract surgery, which is highly common and usually ends up with people wearing Coke bottle type glasses, or used to at least, to a surgery that now enables the surgeon, while he's in the operating room, to fit the exact replacement lens so that most of the patients come out with 20/20 vision. And I'm enormously proud of being part of that and being the original founder of that company, along with, again, with a partner in that case. But because we did change, we changed lives, and we had the goal and the vision of changing lives. So getting there was a great joy, but I don't think we would have gotten anywhere close, and I don't think we would have survived the first two or three financial crises if we didn't have that overriding drive. We'd have just gone on to something else that might or might not have been successful. So that's one aspect of what I look on as the entrepreneurial mind, that clear sense of a vision of where one wants to go.
And yet that, in my mind, needs to be flexible still. Because like you said, like technology can come up and sideswipe you, and your vision needs to adapt to that.
Well, I think that's correct. There's an old and rather tired analogy, but I think it's still valid. It's been described that the first moon launch was off course 98% of the time, but by making constant adjustments and having a fixed target, those adjustments were able to be made. And lo and behold, we did indeed land people on the moon. And I look on the entrepreneurial process very much the same way. I've never had a project that I started that ended up where I expected it to. I would love to say that I had, but it just has never occurred. So I think the flexibility is an enormous part. I liken it a little bit like to sailing a sailboat race. I used to race sailboats, so it's kind of a subject close to my heart. When you start out with a race, particularly if you're sailing upwind or into the wind, you can't go in a straight line to your target. You have to go off at a 30 or 40 degree angle to the target and then back the other way and zigzag until you get there. And what that requires is that you have a very clear idea of where what they're called waypoints are, where you're going to change course and go the other direction to make the overall race as short and as fast as possible. Well, I think entrepreneurship is a lot the same way, at least it's been for me. The only difference is we often didn't know where the waypoints were, and we had to figure them out along the way of oh, whoops, that didn't work. What can we do now to still get where we're going? But the principle's the same. You have a long-term goal, and then you have short-term targets that you either meet or don't meet, and many of them won't be met. But if without those targets, you're just kind of afloat in the ocean, and that's no fun, and it's usually a recipe for failure.
Long-term goal and short-term...
I call them targets or waypoints. Waypoints is just the sailor in me, so probably nice. Targets is better. Not everybody knows anything about sailing or cares to.
No, but I actually didn't know that, and it, I mean, if I would have, I guess, had to think about it. Obviously, you can't head straight into the wind if your boat is propelled by wind. You need to go off on like angles so that you
can... It does work better that way, yeah.
So that is a great analogy for it. This idea of the vision and where you want to go, but then you also mentioned in there, Ken, this idea of like wanting to change the world. And so when you're creating technology or a company around like vision and helping people see again or fixing their vision, it's easy to see how you want to change the world. What if somebody who's listening like is a plumber, but now they've like hired a couple employees and now they want to like scale across their whole city and create a cool like plumbing empire? Does that change the world or should they be moving on to something else?
Oh, no, I think that does change the world. I mean, we all change the world if we do it all in tiny increments. And so I think that is every bit as valid a dream. The main thing about the dream is it's got to have emotional content for the entrepreneur, I believe. I've never known anybody who succeeded who didn't love what they were trying to achieve, whether it's developing a plumbing business or developing a better way of crocheting, whatever it might be. There has to be an emotional content for the person trying to do it, or things, by and large, sink the first time there's a major storm. And so I don't think it matters how big the vision is. I don't know that my visions were, in the case of the optical company, it actually started out a little smaller. We just thought we had a better way to do LASIK. And we evolved into something that I think made a much greater impact. And similarly, one company I started, our vision was we thought there was a way possibly to cure diabetes. Well, that was an incredibly lofty goal, and I will hasten to tell you we didn't solve it. But along the way, we did create some new technology that I think is going to enable people, probably not in our company, though we've licensed technology and it's gone elsewhere, but to make major medical changes, all because we thought we had an idea and it was worth pursuing. And other companies that I've started have had much less lofty goals, but they've been meaningful to me. And I think that's made all the difference in the world.
So according to what I've read about you in my research leading into this, Ken, you've started 11 companies, which you've mentioned a couple of them now. And you just mentioned us sort of like, I'm going to assume that that is one of the elements you use to decide on what you should start. But I would love to know, as somebody who has decades of experience behind you and has started 11 companies, all of varying degrees of success, but that's beyond the point. Besides just like having this sort of emotional content to it, what else like are determining factors to you? Because I'm sure over the decades, you've had more than 11 ideas come to you to start businesses, but you've only started 11, not right. Way more than most people. But how, like, what else kind of goes into your process of determining that, yes, this is the business for me right now?
Well, I think a major factor is one that I call friction points. So the question then becomes, does whatever I'm thinking about doing solve some meaningful friction point in life? And sometimes those friction points are not ones that people are even aware of. I mean, think, for example, of the original iPod from Apple, which became the Apple computer and so on and so forth. I'm not sure that anybody really realized that not having a device that you could carry around in your pocket and play songs and talk on the phone and all of the things that an iPhone or a smartphone will do now was all that even feasible or important. But at the beginning, the original iPod, which kind of started it all, was designed to solve a friction point. People had portable disc recorders, and they jumped and they wiggled and the songs didn't come through clearly. And they were a pain in the neck and they were bulky. And one of the things that Steve Jobs did was reduce all that down to a small handheld unit that didn't jump off track and that you could carry around and actually use. So he solved a friction point. You could have argued at the beginning, well, it's not that big a deal. Ultimately, it became the biggest company in the world. So I think life is, and entrepreneurship is often about looking for those friction points that bug us and saying, I wonder if there's a better way to do that. Now, most people say that and they just say, well, yeah, wouldn't it be nice if? The entrepreneur looks at it and says, yeah, and I wonder if I could solve that problem. And that's a significant difference between most of us and the person with a genuinely entrepreneurial mind. So I think but that doesn't have to be something as big as the Apple universe turned out to be. It can be a very simple one. I don't know whether it ever made it off the ground, but there was a young woman who came to me a few years ago, and she was working on a problem, which was actually keeps resurfacing now of straws and what do you do with them and throw them away and so on. And no, I'm sorry. It was of what do you do with the packets of sugar after you've sugared your coffee? She came up with a bright idea. Why not make the package that the sugar is in water soluble and you just throw it in the cup and then you don't have anything to dispose of. And it's completely user friendly. And she actually developed a product for that and was on her way to trying to market it. I don't think it ultimately succeeded, but it was very clever thinking about exactly what I'm talking about, which was, well, there's a friction point. We all tear open the little package. Now, where do we throw it away? And we have to walk across the room and find a waste bin. What if you could just throw the package of sugar in your cup of coffee? So that was very creative thinking and probably didn't make it for other reasons. I can think of a number of barriers that it probably faced, and I ultimately lost track of the woman who was doing it. But that's an example of the kind of thing that I think fuels the entrepreneurial mind. I could probably, or you could probably think of 20 more if we started down that road, but that's the concept.
I love this idea of friction points. Again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this is in relation to how most people talk about it as pain points. And something like the iPod, I think people get stuck, now that you've mentioned it as friction points, I think people get stuck because if they were trying to think of the next iPod, it's not a pain point, quote unquote. Like, it's not painful that we couldn't have our music with us. But there was definitely friction. There was a gap there that needed to be filled, where the disc was skipping as I tried to jog or ride my bike. And so I want to bring music with me. But I like thinking of it this way. It's friction. And that friction can be really small, yet it could still be something that a million people have that friction every single day. And if you can identify that and remove that friction, you now have a legitimate business around you.
I absolutely agree. And that's why I've used the concept as well as the phrase friction point instead of pain point, because it isn't always painful. We don't always even kind of know what's missing. I'll give you another example. It's maybe not right on point, but it was a company that I started some years ago. And I had a partner who was pretty creative at coming up with ideas. I tended to be the guy who implemented them, so we worked pretty well together. And he came to me one day and he said, you know, Ken, in the Palm Springs area, I live in Los Angeles, there's all of this vacant desert land and the wind just blows like crazy. And yet I noticed that up in the Tehachapi Valley, they have wind turbines up there, but the wind turbines are constantly breaking because the wind changes direction all the time. I wonder if there's something we could do out in the desert where the wind blows pretty much one direction and pretty much every day. Well, the net result of that was we started fiddling around and we bought 1,000 acres of land for practically nothing because nobody wanted it. The wind blew and sand blew and you certainly didn't want to spend any time there. And ended up building the first wind energy park in Southern California and put the turbines up. I found out to my disgust that the turbines are incredibly maintenance intensive. And I didn't enjoy the process of running the business, but we split the partnership amicably. And I took my share of the 1,000 acres, leased it out to a couple of other wind developers. And every year I get more income than my entire original investment and have been for the last 30 years. And all we were really doing was solving a friction point of what do you do with vacant land where the wind blows all the time that is next to a thriving municipal city? There must be something that can be done with this. And I didn't have the original idea. I just helped capitalize on it. But again, it was a friction point, but of a very different kind.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And because, so many people would have thought of that in a different way because of that property and the wind never stopping, but it was a unique way. Which brings us to, it's an interesting point because you mentioned a business partner there, and I believe in this conversation, you've mentioned a business partner as well. So business partners. I don't know if you've had business partners throughout every endeavor you've gone into, Ken, but I would love to have, hear your opinion on, are business partners valuable? And if so, are they worth taking the time to seek out?
I think they are very valuable if you find a good business partner. And I think good business partners, in my case at least, have started with friendships, with people that I was doing something else with rather than that particular project. I don't think I've ever started a project and said, I need a business partner for this. But I've started many projects where I was working on one thing with a partner or an acquaintance or an associate, and one or the other of us or collectively, we came upon an idea and then built on it. One of the reasons that I think having a good partner is so valuable, first of all, nobody thinks of everything, and having a second perspective and point of view from someone that you know and trust is enormously helpful. The other is, as the business begins to grow and you begin to add employees, it gets very lonely at the top. And a good partner is someone who shares the risk and shares the burden and shares the vision with you, but it's also someone can say, Ken, you're absolutely nuts on that idea. Get real. What's going on with you? Well, your employee is not likely to say that to you. And so if you have a good business partner, it can often save you from going many miles down dead-end roads just because no one was willing to say the emperor has no clothes when you didn't. So I found them very valuable. Now, there's a downside. Not all business partners, and I've seen this more in companies that I have invested in than ones that I've started, but often the original business partner, one or the other of the partners, outgrows the other. And at some point, you find you need to separate the business and buy out the partner or work out an exit strategy. So there's a great value in thinking about from the very beginning and being candid with your partner. How do we exit this if down the road we find we want to go different directions? For example, in the wind park business, my two other partners wanted to stay in the business of building turbines. And the only answer we had was, look, we have a lot of acreage. We've only developed a small portion of it so far. Let's just divide up the land and we'll each go down the road with our separate businesses and our separate knowledge on it. And they built very successful wind turbine businesses. I decided I wanted to do other things. I was particularly interested in biotech and had very little to do with wind turbines. So I leased my land out and I've been very happy, although I've probably made less money than certainly than the more successful of my two former partners. So it's all part of a process, but I think partners in general are extremely valuable and you just need to think carefully about how you're going to get into the partnership, who's going to own what, who's going to have the deciding vote if there's a dispute, and how do you ultimately get out of it if you choose to. But you look at the big companies that have been, that have grown, and you know, the monster companies, most of them have started with a couple of partners, Hewlett and Packard. Bill Gates had a partner. Zuckerberg had a partner with Facebook originally. It didn't end well, but had a partner. It's very rare for hugely successful companies to be done solely by one person. I don't think, I'm not sure of my history here, but I think even Steve Jobs had an early partner in Apple. So at the very beginning, it's awfully hard to replace the value of a second mind that you trust and that's attuned to yours.
Yeah, Steve Jobs definitely did have a partner when they started. And as an investor looking at companies, Ken, do you think you look at a company, a new proposal differently if it's a solo founder and she's all by herself, or if there's like two of them, would they kind of think differently and can maybe tackle different problems?
Yes, I do. Because what I'm looking at really is, has this founder put a team around themselves that I think can execute and get the company to the next level. And more often than not, it'll be a founder team. Now, in one case, one of the more successful companies that I've ever invested in had a dominant founder, but he had a very loyal and trusted co-founder who owned, I think, I don't remember the ratio, but maybe owned 10% as much of the as the founder did, or 20%, but was very, very good at some of the things the founder wasn't as good at. And ultimately, that particular co-founder left the company a multi-millionaire, and they are still friends to this day. But that minor partner, if you will, was invaluable in the early stages. And I found that generally true. It's very rare that you have a founder who is all by themselves, who has a vision that they can execute on. Once in a while it happens, but I'd much prefer to see at least the nucleus of a team.
I love it. I love it. All right, Ken, it's been a fascinating conversation. I would like to wrap up though with one final question for you, if I could.
Absolutely.
So Ken, you have 40 plus years experience as an entrepreneur. You've started numerous companies and invested in many others. So I'm really interested to see where this goes, but I've interviewed almost 500 entrepreneurs now on the show, and I've come across this idea I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. It seems to be this gap that we live in as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, where no matter what we accomplish personally or in business, we never see ourselves or our businesses as quote unquote successful. Like success always comes in 3 months when you hit that metric, or in 6 months when you stand on that stage. Yet you and I both know that seconds before you hit any goal, you just set bigger, loftier ones into the future. So from the outside, you can look successful, but from the inside, it's always coming. So I would love it, rather than looking forward right now, Ken, I would love it if you could turn and look around behind you. You've told us a lot about sort of what you've done over the last 40 years, but not nearly all of it, not the highs, the lows, the wins, and all the losses. But I would love to know, how do you feel about this entire entrepreneurial journey up until this moment?
Well, I feel very good about it, quite frankly. And but you're right. I don't look on any of the projects really as being a success or even a failure. I can think of a couple that did not turn out well, but were not failures for me because I learned so much from them that fueled the next project that I wanted to do. I think entrepreneurship, like much of life, is about the journey and not about the destination. Now, that's a little bit contradictory to when I say you need a goal. They're not really contradictory. But if you're not enjoying the process, then you're probably not going to be a very good entrepreneur because you're not going to wake up every morning and say, wow, I got a new idea that maybe we could make our product better, or we could do this better, or do that better. And at the risk of being shamelessly promotional, that's part of why I wrote the book, Dream Toolbox, because I saw young people floundering, trying to figure out where to go. And I said, if I can shift and give people an idea of what the entrepreneurial mind looks like and how to develop it, I can increase their chances of success way beyond what I could do by trying to help them one at a time to start a business. So that's my goal and my vision, but it's a process. And unless you enjoy the process, go get a day job, because it should be exciting and it should be fun. And you should have new ideas long before you've even brought the last one to fruition.
I love it. So this book, Dream Toolbox, we've got to mention it. You just mentioned it briefly, but we have people listening. They've been intrigued by what you've said, Ken. Is this book just for people starting out, or is it for other people as well?
Well, it's for everybody. I started out to write a book for young people, teenagers primarily, and very young and college kids, to try to help them launch their careers. What I've discovered is that many, many people who have read it and then have taken the trouble to comment to me say, you know, I've been in business for 30 or 40 years, and many of them have been entrepreneurs, but you said something on page so-and-so that caused me to shift the way I was looking at everything I was doing. So my hope is that I may have written a better book than I intended to, but I do know that it's helpful to people in all manner of life and just in how you look at life. In fact, it's about life, not business, when you really strip it down. So I hope people will take a look at it. It's on Amazon. It's on the dreamtoolbox.com website. And I hope it helps some people. All the proceeds go to charity, so I'm not making any money on it, but I sure would like to make some lives better.
Wow, that's awesome. So dreamtoolbox.com is the site. There's a podcast over there. There's the book. You can also find the book by going directly to Amazon.
Yes.
If you cannot remember all that because you're walking, jogging, working out, over at hacktheentrepreneur.com, you can track down Ken's episode, and I'll link to everything over there for you when you're ready. Ken, once again, thanks so much. This was just a fascinating conversation. I truly, truly enjoyed. And just keep doing what you're doing, because it is truly awesome to watch.
Well, and you keep doing what you're doing, because you give a platform to people like me who have or think we have a message, and it's often hard to get it out to the world. So thank you as well, and thank you for allowing me on your show.
Damn, that was a lot of fun. The insights and the experience that comes through Ken as he talks is truly fascinating to me. I love getting his perspective on it as an entrepreneur and founder himself, or co-founder as well, but also as an investor. It's interesting to see somebody successful and then seeing what they look for in new companies and new ideas to decide if they're going to put their own money in, because they see that this business could actually work. To me, that's a great way to think about it, is to think about how somebody would look at your idea and if they would be willing to put their money on the line. Because it's easy for friends and family and everybody to say, yeah, that's a great idea. But when it comes to putting the money on the line, it's a whole different thing. So I'm really happy that we got to discuss that. But as you're aware, you were just listening, we discussed many different things. We took some interesting turns that I wasn't really expecting from this conversation, which is always cool. But it also makes this part hard. The part where I have to go back through the conversation And I can't pick out five things or four things or three things. I have to pick out just one from the many, many interesting things that Ken said. And I have to bring that to you. But I've done it when I'm ready. Are you ready? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
But the principle's the same. You have a long-term goal, and then you have short-term targets that you either meet or don't meet, and many of them won't be met. But if without those targets, you're just kind of afloat in the ocean, and that's no fun, and it's usually a recipe for failure.
And that's the hack. Ken. I love this. You have long-term goals, which we need, yes, and then you also have short-term targets. This, to me, is the solution to so many of our problems, because we set goals. We're coming into a new year. We're going to set lofty, big goals. We're going to set them 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years down the line, or we're going to try to, and maybe we're going to sort of freeze up because it seems like too big of a task to be setting such long-term goals when we don't really even know where exactly we're heading. So the goal doesn't have to be that you're going to start X business that's going to do this and this and this, but it can be that you are starting a business. And like on the previous episode with Chase Jarvis, he talked about just making that decision, right? So when you make that decision, that's it. And so the long-term goal can be based on successes of a quote, business without knowing exactly what that is. But the key is knowing that all of this, the only way you're going to get to whatever those goals are you set is going to be through short-term targets, which are easier to set for ourselves because there's less of a barrier to it. There can be a 1 month, it can be 6 weeks, it can be 8 weeks, it can be 12-week goals. And so they're not as like set in these big sort of written in stone, and that's just how my life's going to be for the next years. And also, as you're making these short-term targets and hitting them or missing them, whatever it happens to be, you'll also start to really clearly define what your long-term goals and what your long-term visions are. So yes, you do have to set it as clearly as you can, whether that's super clear or not, but then really focus on those short-term goals and make sure that those goals are always leading you at least towards that end goal. Ken, thank you so very, very much. All right. That was a lot of fun. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the site. Head over there. I'll have show notes for Ken with links to the Dream Toolbox as well as his book. And as I said, if this topic fascinates you, as I feel like it should, the entrepreneurial mindset is the foundation of all of this. While you're over at the site, check out the course. I've made it especially for you, and it's based on conversations with 480-something different entrepreneurs I've talked to from around the world at all different stages of their business. And I know for a fact that it will really help you. So it's How to Think Like an Entrepreneur. You can find it over on the site. And with that said, I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. Thank you once again for stopping by. I absolutely, truly appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.